Hey, this is Wolf Hoffman from Accept, and I want you to focus on metal. Focus on
metal! Hey, metalheads, Scott here.
And Richie.
And welcome to that which we call Focus on Metal, episode 593. So how we doing, man?
I'm doing great.
Doing good?
Yeah. We want to do a discussion episode.
I think we promised last time we would do a discussion episode.
Yeah.
So here we are, actually doing as promised.
So and here.
And here, yes, yeah. And here in my little cement box. So I know one thing that last time we had talked, we did talk a little bit about this new Sabbath box set. Somehow we just kind of ran out of time and we didn't really talk about it. But I think it's an interesting thing. So I thought if we just throw it out, start with this week.
Yeah.
Talk about that, which is Anno Domini, which is the four album Tony Martin years of the band, which is very interesting that they would, it's good. And it's good that they remix them as well, because now a couple of them actually sound a little bit more listenable than they did at the beginning. But I thought it was pretty cool they brought that out. I did my full media whore and have the CD and vinyl versions, but that's also because CD version has some bonus tracks.
Yeah.
Which is like, if they did the remix, they got a recut. Do you think that maybe they would have been able to figure out how to put either bonus tracks or
a 12-inch vinyl with the three bonus tracks on it?
I'm trying to think who did it. I think Van Halen did it in the box set 2.
Yes.
That they have an additional vinyl, yeah, which is a great way to handle it.
It's got some B-sides and...
Yeah. So, like, why didn't they do that?
Unreleased stuff.
That would be perfect.
I agree. I have the vinyl version. So what you get is it's Headless Cross, Tear, Cross Purposes and Forbidden.
Yep.
So the first three are remastered and Forbidden is remixed.
Yes, thank God.
Yeah. from what I've read over the years, they all thought that the mix was crap and they didn't understand why Ernie C was producing it anyway.
Yeah.
I know Neil Murray posted on social media that he's very happy that it's out and that Forbidden got remixed because he says it sounds a lot better. Tony Martin has been doing press saying the same thing. And of course, Tony Iommi, the same thing. But some people are, you know, in a bit of a hump because it doesn't have the Eternal Idol, which is the first record he did.
Correct, but it's
on
a different label.
And people are saying, oh, it's incomplete, but you can still get the Eternal Idol. Mm-hmm. This stuff has been out of print for a long time.
Although, to get Eternal Idol on vinyl, it's pricey.
It is, but it's been re-released on CD. It's been it's out with, I think Ray Gillen has been singing.
It's absolutely gettable.
It's there.
Yeah.
And if you wanted any of this stuff, you were paying for it.
Yeah.
Because it's been out of print for many years. And what I loved about this was that Tony was able to remix an album.
Yeah.
Like, everybody has a wish list of records that they love that
sure.
Not done for.
Yeah.
Justice for All being one of them. Because over the years, musicians have come out and said, oh, if I was able to go back and do it, I'd do it.
Right.
And Tony was able to do it with this record, which by and large, 99% of the people thought sounded like shit anyway.
Right.
And he's done a fantastic job on it.
Yeah, yeah. And the whole packaging is awesome as well.
It's fabulous.
So in one way, I appreciate the fact that the albums are put into a high-quality sleeve rather than a paper sleeve. But the downside is that now you have to have all your lyrics...
They're in the book.
Are in the book.
Yes.
But not on the CD version.
Oh, okay. They are in the book in the vinyl version.
Only in the vinyl version.
So you have no lyrics?
No.
So I'm getting the lyrics and you're getting the bonus tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's three bonus tracks on it, and one I think is a B-side on Forbidden, and I think two of the other ones are Japanese tracks on the other earlier albums. Yeah. And they should have done like a 12-inch single and put it in with it.
Or a 7, either that or
a 7-inch single.
Because like I've got that with Priest, with Invincible Shield, so they had some like bonus track stuff.
Yeah.
And they just, and so not in every version, but one of the versions, I think it's the pink version, includes the 7-inch bonuses.
Yeah, but they obviously want you to buy both of them.
Well, I bought
which you did. Yeah. No, I'm on about the Black Sabbath box set.
Oh, yes.
If I want the bonus tracks,
yeah.
I have the vinyl now. I have to get the CD.
Yeah. Well, the other thing is they, like I said, they did a good job on the packaging, right? So I like the fact that the tour book is going to be the same regular tour book size on the vinyl.
The quality is really good on it.
The booklet, I like the stiffness of the small format booklet in the CD, but I love the readability and size, even though it's a little bit floppy, as a 12x12 out of there. And then the other one, it's a nit, really, is that did the poster and the vinyl need to be that freaking big? They could have done the same size poster as what they did in the CD. Like, who's going to really frame that poster? It's freaking huge.
I haven't even noticed.
Exactly. Because you're probably looking at it going, I'm not even going to unfold that. Go unfold part of it, and you'll be like, Mother of God, why is it this big? It's huge. And okay. There's no reason for it. Like, none.
Give me the 12-inch. You can keep the poster.
It's almost like not quite Subway poster size, but it's unnecessarily big.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess it would be great if you were 15 and you want to have this giant cross on your wall, but yeah. But I think the packaging was awesome. I like it. The classic, like the black on it, reminds me of the Black Sabbath CD set that I have from way back. And yeah, I think overall it was great. It was great to have a Tony Martin years thing come out too, because the guy's always been kind of like overlooked in the overall, you know?
I love that Tony Iommi has done this, because it says to me as well that how much fondness and love for that lineup and that music that he did with Tony that he still has now. Because you have a lot of musicians now that are up there in years, and there's certain periods of their career that they just blank out.
Yeah.
They just don't want to talk about it. But with Tony, he's gone and he spent the time remixing a record.
Yeah.
Like Tony Iommi could go and all he could do was the Aussie stuff or the Dio stuff and talk about that for years.
Yeah.
This took a lot of time and effort to do.
Yeah.
Now, is it Sabbath? That's questionable. I don't care. I love it anyway. I've always loved the Tony Martin era. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's out there. It sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
I think it's great for Tony Martin.
Yeah.
He's been doing press for it. I think a lot of people over the years have, I think they've warmed up to the music a little bit more. They were very reactionary, I think, in the beginning, especially because Sabbath, when it came to singers, they were a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
It was...
Yeah, the resolving...
It was Dio, it was Gillan, it was David Donato, it was in there for like 5 seconds. And then it was Ray Gillan, and then it was Tony. But Tony did 5 records.
Yeah.
And he had Ronnie in between.
Yep.
And then Tony came back and he did two more.
Which is the other thing, to his credit, he was like, all right, I'll come back.
He sang early on Dehumanizer.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you read Geezer's book.
Yeah,
I think there's a part in Geezer's book where I think Ronnie showed up with Vinny or someone and nobody bothered to tell Neil Murray and Tony Martin.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like you said, you know, whether you think this is Sabbath or not, that's a good comment, because Tony is even though, you know, people think, yep, he's the guy that steers the Black Sabbath ship, right? Tony is Black Sabbath. But he does tend to go and be kind of a chameleon with who he's playing with, right? So he gets in Vinny, kind of different drumming style. It's not the jazzy stuff that Bill was doing. He's got a different singer with different lyrics and different melodies. And all of a sudden you get Heaven and Hell, right? Granted, Bill wasn't there. But But you get, between that, between Mob Rules, you get like a different Black Sabbath, this heavier Black Sabbath, at least to me. Tony, you get Cozy. You got Neil Murray. So again, you've got the only commonalities are really Tony and Jeff Nichols. And Jeff's going to do whatever Tony says. So it's really Tony's the common denominator with that. But essentially now you get a whole new cast of players to play against, right? And so you get something that is still coming out of Tony's mind, but it's a different sound. And whether people like it or not, but that's what he decided. Whether he felt like that's what he needed to do or he decided to do, that's what he was doing then.
Mm. I'm a bigger Dio fan.
Sure.
I got into Black Sabbath. I think Dio was probably the first voice of Sabbath I heard. So I think I appreciate Tony more because of that, because Tony's more of the Dio sound with Sabbath than Ozzy was.
Yeah.
Now, I love the Ozzy stuff, but that came later on.
Right.
But there's certain people out there, and I think that's the main, gripe that they have is, if it's not Ozzy, it's not Sabbath.
Well, what's interesting is, there's people that really think, okay, Ozzy, Black Sabbath. My opinion is there's a lion's share of those people that didn't listen much beyond the common tracks that are played, right? So they're not listening to, maybe they're listening to Dr. Doctor off of Technical Ecstasy, but that's probably it off of Technical Ecstasy, right? So you kind of go through the Sabbath catalog and there's, I'm sure, a lot of stuff that no one like even is aware that they were doing. I mean, how varied that, which one is it?
Which album?
Which album is Planet Caravan on? Is that?
Paranoid.
Is that on Paranoid?
Yeah.
Which one am I thinking? What about Laguna Sunrise?
That's Volume 4.
Volume 4. And Volume 4 is varied as fuck.
So is Sabbath Bloody Sabbath and Sabotage.
It is, but I think Sabbath Bloody Sabbath, I think, is still, when you listen to all of that, it still seems kind of more...
It's got Rick Wakeman on it.
It does, but it seems more like comprehensive. It's...
Well, the flow is better?
In a way, there's almost more going on, and it seems like it belongs. 4, now, you come from me listening to each album completely and like devouring it. And then 4 comes along. It was almost like what happened with Zeppelin 3. It was like,
changes.
What the fuck happened? And so you have this whole kind of weird California, laid back vibe that hits with that one. And it just, and I think people that go, oh, it's got to be Ozzy. I think for a lot of them, they didn't really delve into the whole catalog and see a lot of the other stuff going. They just know, Paranoid. They know Iron Man. They know, it's always been Ozzy and stuff. And yeah, granted, there's people that are deep into it too, but I think there's probably more of a predominant that folks that know a smattering throughout all of it. You know what I mean? So when you get to something like Tony Martin, they're just like, it's not Sabbath. It's not Dio. It's not Ozzy. And I think Dio, that one has this very consistent sound of, and people either went, fuck yeah, or they were the other thing, which is that it's not Ozzy. It sucks. But Dio, pretty consistent. Even coming back and doing Dehumanizer, it became like, yeah, that almost sounds like it could come right after Mob Rules. You almost forget that there's stuff between it, And Gillan, that's a whole different story.
Now, hopefully Tony will finally get around to remixing Born Again.
With a new cover? What would Crusher do?
I wouldn't care about the cover, but that's an album that I actually really like. I understand why people don't like the mix on it. But
it's a good album, though.
That's
like
a
Hero
fucking heavy record.
Yeah, there's some really good songs on that.
I think one of the things that album in particular to me does about Tony in my eyes is not only is Tony a fantastic riff writer, but he knows when to space the riffs.
Yeah.
So when they come in on the song, they fucking floor you. I think Disturbing the Priest on that record, when he it's all kind of ambient. When the fucking riffs come in, you're fucking floored.
Yeah.
And he's just done that throughout his career. He's not flashy. He's not fast.
Yeah.
But the riffs are memorable, and a lot of the times they're just fucking perfect.
Yeah. I mean, he does some stuff. When he was playing with Dio, he got a little bit faster with stuff, but still like very fluid. Yeah. Great player.
Yeah.
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 I love that album.
Yeah.
The cover is, like I said, sorry, Crusher. I know you weren't very crazy about it either, but.
Yeah, well. Oh, well. So anyway, here's the topic I'm going to hit you with.
Oh, boy.
Right.
We did all of this to finally get to a topic.
Right. So the topic I have in hand is I have a list of 5 bands that I love or I used to love.
Okay.
That I have no real interest in buying anything they bring out now.
Okay. Right. This is like the Focus on Metal game show. Richie comes down and comes up, tosses out the game show question to me.
So I was, 3 or 4 of them came, boom, 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 boom.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
And then the last one was, it's more recent.
Okay.
And if I honestly, if I thought more about it, I could probably add a couple more
bands.
You'd
probably drive home tonight and you'd be like, oh, fuck, now, I should have picked that one.
I'm going to get, you're not a true fan and whatever, you know, but there's over the years, I've loved a lot of these bands' music. There's certain albums that I love by them that other people have thought that they weren't that good, and I'll probably get into that.
Yeah.
So I'll start with the big one. I have not any real interest in buying anything new from Ozzy. And I bought Ordinary Man.
Okay. You didn't buy Patient Number 9.
I did not. I probably heard one song on it. I had no interest in buying it. I think I listened to Ordinary Man about 4 or 5 times the week it came out.
Huh?
I haven't listened to it since.
Yeah.
And I still listen to a shit ton of Ozzy.
Yeah.
I like the Scream record.
Yeah.
Right? I like Down to Earth. There's a lot of stuff on Black Rain that I really like. But with Ozzy now, it's just not doing it for me.
Yeah, so I will say that, and I did buy Patient Number 9, only on vinyl, Comic-Con version, but it's definitely different now. It's like, it used to be that you knew, okay, you were buying an Ozzy record, and it was a record that Ozzy wrote with, you know, with Randy and company, or it was one that Ozzy was writing with Zach, or one that he did with Gus. But now it's like, geez, it's like Ozzy with whoever decides to be a songwriter on an Ozzy album. And then you go, for this particular one, who's fucking producing?
Andrew Watt, again.
You know, and so it's, so you there seems to be a little bit of, a lot of clutching at stuff. One reason I did buy it is because he had Jeff Beck on it.
He's got Tony Iommi on it, too.
And I was more interested in what would Ozzy do with Jeff Beck, and how would Jeff Beck sound with Ozzy. So I was very interested in that because I'm a big Jeff Beck fan. And it was like, yeah, that's pretty cool. But I would say that I have become, probably since Ordinary Man, I've become very less enthused about Ozzy. I may not have even bought Ordinary Man. But I know I did Patient. Again, part of it was the whole Jeff Beck thing. But yeah, it doesn't make me want to celebrate like, ooh, a new Ozzy album as much as it used to.
Yeah, because that's the feeling I get with all these bands.
Yeah.
Years ago, now granted I'm a lot older and hopefully wiser, but I used to get excited.
Right.
Wow, the new fucking Metallica song or new Megadeth song or, you know, and now it's okay.
Right.
On some of them. And with others, it's like, I don't really want to hear that.
Yeah. So, and I think part of it is, you know, you do get older. You do have a lot of shit going on, right? You have less marbles available to digest and stuff as well. But I think there is still some other stuff too, where we start to make things smoother. And so there's a little raw edge that's missing. You've always talked about liking albums more where you can sense that the people are all in the same room together and not sending things where again, that kind of smooths. And I think you like that, where you can feel the energy when you hear the song. And when you don't, it seems to be like you're like, you don't like it as much.
With Ozzy, is it Ozzy singing or is it AI Ozzy?
Yeah.
Is he coming in and singing six words and then they just AI just makes the rest of the album for him? You know, it goes through a software and everything is auto-tuned. And was, I know he's in his 70s. I know he's had health issues. And if people get are really enjoying these albums, well good for you. But,
sure.
But you know, I can listen to the earlier Ozzy albums. And again, when I say earlier Ozzy albums, I'm not going, you know,
Blizzard of Oz. Yeah.
Barry. I can listen to Scream, which is 12 or 13 years old.
Right.
And I can go, fucking hell, I really fucking like this.
Yeah, and it's got that, and again, part of it probably is being old, right? But Scream has that classic Ozzy kind of propulsion and energy, and you go, yeah, fuck yeah. Where you don't get that with this almost, it's...
Post Malone?
Yeah. And it's the almost like the Ozzy's one step from becoming a lounge singer kind of a vibe on it. It's got this just very medium vibe, and it just kind of lopes along, and yeah, it doesn't have that same kind of sound.
Mm. So, like, next band, Bon Jovi.
Oh yeah, I can get behind that one like 200%. Because what was the video they made? They were like in a tunnel.
I've no idea.
That's how far back this goes, where it was like, that was like their last. So I actually started to not really give a crap after Richie left. Because there's a song, there was a dynamic that was happening there with the songwriting and stuff. So that was part of it. And then it was this whole like, oh, I didn't do all that stuff before. Now I'm a country guy.
Yeah, I want to be a serious. I want to be classified as a serious.
Yeah, and he can do what he wants musician. And stuff, and that's fine. But that's when going along and being and having this band that was one way, and you like you liked it for a lot of those reasons, and they're just not doing that anymore. You go, So, like, that's one of those bands where I can be, I don't feel bad about the fact that there's a huge amount of the American market that went, we're done. And yet Japan is steadfast behind them. It's like, that's fine. But, I lost the plot on them a long time ago.
I think, the album that they departed from their traditional sound a little bit was Lost Highway, where they went a little bit country. That's an album that I really like.
Yeah.
But it's the last album that they brought out that I really like. Around that time, they were bringing out Have a Nice Day. I found it was four or five songs, maybe six songs I liked. The rest of them I had no interest in.
That was the album where I was like, that single off of Have a Nice Day.
Yeah.
That was like the last one where I was like,
that's
not too bad.
I didn't really like Crush, which was the late 90s one.
Uh-huh.
I like Bounce a lot, I think, which was... when was that? Was it just after 9/11, I think.
Huh.
The year after 9/11, I think it might have come out. And then after that, it's been... They brought out What About Now. I put on two songs. I turned it off.
Yeah.
I thought The Circle, by and large... See, they're one of these bands that always had... Oh, they're returning to their rock roots.
Uh-huh.
And then you put it on and it's fucking... You know, FM radio...
Yeah.
Middle of the road kind of stuff.
Yeah.
That is nothing like fucking New Jersey or Slippery When Wet.
Right.
But they had the fucking carrot. They'd tease it every single time. And The Circle, I thought, more or less was not very good. Yeah. What About Now, two songs in. It's like, where's the fucking guitars on this?
Yeah.
Then they brought This House Is Not For Sale. Didn't buy it. 2020, didn't buy it. They have a new record coming out. There's seven people in the fucking band now. It's like Journey. I'm like, what the fuck? You know? Again, I agree with you. Richie was a huge part of that band's sound. Underrated guitar player, underrated singer.
Yes.
And songwriter.
Yeah.
But they brought out that box set years ago and it had all these unreleased songs on it.
Yeah.
And some of them were fucking excellent. And yeah. a lot of them would fucking blow anything away that they're releasing now.
Yeah.
And the new record is coming out, I believe it's this Friday. I have zero interest in buying it. I listened to the single and I'm like, eh, sounds like the fucking first single from the last record.
Yeah, I know that they're on the cover of the new Collector's Music that just came in. And I just saw it and went, eh.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's definitely one where, yeah, I just, it was like, no, I'm done. Oh, yeah.
I don't like it, okay?
Third band. Motley Crue. Right. Oh, and this is nothing to do with the I'm Camp Mick.
Oh.
Right. But I don't Motley Crue haven't brought out anything remotely decent in my view for at least 20 years. They brought out a couple of new songs on the dirt, no interest in that. Saints of Los Angeles. One or two songs three, four songs maybe I like on it. I haven't listened to it in years because who the fuck played on it? Who the fuck wrote it?
Yeah.
Is it Motley Crue? Is it not Motley Crue?
Yeah.
New Tattoo is a couple of decent songs on it.
Yeah.
Generation Swine. Ugh. You know, I'm a big fan of the Karabi record.
Yep.
But it's been a long, long time since they brought out anything, in my opinion, that's really good. And they kept bringing out this one or two new songs on the greatest hits. And then they'd bring out a new song. Do you remember they brought out that song Sex for
yes,
a tour?
Yes, yeah.
I can't even fucking remember what it goes like. I think I listened to it at the show and I'm like, so who, you know, we're all these Motley Crue fans, you know, clamoring for all the fucking new material in the set. And now they're bringing out new songs now and, you know, Tommy Lee's going around saying it's insane and like, fucking hell, you know. Like,
yeah, was definitely a, okay, you guys, you said, honest to God, oath and blood, we're not going to do anything anymore. You should have kept it that way. Yeah, I like John Five. He's a freaking awesome guitar player. Even with John Five on offer, I have no interest. Even if Mick was still in the band, I have no interest.
Yeah, because I was the same with the Sex song and the Dirt.
I think it's definitely was ultimately put to bed seeing him on the stadium tour and being, oh my God. They started out making very, I don't mean it in a negative way, but very simple, punchy, 2 to 3 minute songs that hit in the face and they moved on and you remembered them and you went, fuck yeah. Those are not songs that are hard to bring live. And they sounded like crap. But there's no excuse for that at all. And that shows a lack of respect for the people that paid for your tickets, too. Because, you know, Poison sounded freaking spot on. And in that same PA, Def Leppard sounded freaking awesome. And just a little bit later, on that same PA system, was mud through the speakers.
Maybe the tapes weren't working.
Yeah, maybe. But I was like, this is, I would have felt better if it was still like, yeah, they can still bring that energy live. And that's when I was like, no, I'm done.
Yeah.
Which is unfortunate. I really liked Crue.
Mm. There's a lot of the early stuff. I'm a massive fan of Girls, Girls, Girls. Yeah. I absolutely love that record. Yeah. A lot of people, there's one or two songs on it, the two singles and the rest of it's not
great.
Yeah, and
some of the lyrics are repetitive and stuff, but sonically it was well done.
Yeah, yeah. Next band, Dokken.
Hi, this is Don Dokken, and you're listening to Focus on Metal, one of the greatest rock shows on the planet. Keep listening and keep rocking with Dokken.
And I haven't bought, is it When Heaven Comes Down? Is that what it's called? The last record?
Yeah, I bought that.
Yeah.
I still like Dokken.
I didn't buy it. Love the band. I'm not just talking about George, Jeff, yep. Mick, and you know me now. I'm a massive Oasis Slade fan.
Yeah.
John Levin's a great guitar player. Yep. I like Broken Bones.
Yeah, I was going to say, you even Lightning like some of Don's solo stuff. Yeah. And yeah, so yeah, it's not an original Dokken elitist attitude. Yeah.
But the thing with me now is Don's voice.
Sure.
I just think that he's a shell of what he used to be.
Yeah.
And I've heard people say that he sounds good on the record and the songs are probably written for his voice now, but
yeah,
I have no real desire to buy it.
Yeah, and that was my thing of knowing, and even Don said he's not happy with his voice anymore. He's been pretty honest about that. And I was like, geez, like, why are they doing another one? But then I did hear the single and I went, oh, okay. And I think that's what they did is they said, okay, how do we make this work with what Don's got for a voice? And it was like, okay, I'll get this. So I'm definitely not ready to hang it up on Dokken, but as far as his voice, yeah, he's right on that edge of like, we're not getting there anymore.
Mm.
Which is unfortunate. I mean, the guy's been doing it for so freaking long.
John Levin's a great player.
He's
the band he has is really good, like BJ and Chris McCarville.
And you think John Levin to step in to fucking George's shoes? I mean,
he's a fabulous player,
And he comes in and it's like, okay, I'm just going to put my lawyer hat down and I'm going to go shred some guitar, and he does it like effortlessly, and it's awesome. He does we went and saw him live, and they did so freaking good.
And I had Don on in 2019.
Yeah.
Talking about Erase the Slate, the anniversary of Erase the Slate. And he was talking then about writing a new record.
Yeah.
I think another thing about this record that, it just took too fucking long.
Yeah.
He's been talking about it for years about doing it.
The other thing too is that look how long he's been doing this. It's really the only thing he knows how to do. It's almost like, and I guess it'd be the same with Ozzy too, right? It's really the only thing he knows how to do, doesn't it?
Or Sharon knows what to happen.
Yeah, that's true. But it's like, what is he going to do if he's not doing that? And so I get that. It's that drug of continuing to do it.
Which album's better, the Lynch Mob one or the Dokken one?
Lynch Mob.
Okay, because I have the Lynch Mob one.
Yeah, I don't even have to think twice about that. It's the Lynch Mob one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I was even in Newbury Comics recently and the Dokken record on vinyl was on sale and I had it in my hand and I went, nah.
Yeah.
I put it down.
Yeah. Yeah, it's on an edge. Now, granted, if he comes out with something that's, hey, we got a bunch of unreleased stuff or whatever, yeah, I'll probably definitely bite at that.
Mm. And it's not a case of me not liking new music from bands, because you know me, I do.
Right. Yeah, you're always into new stuff.
It's just certain bands now.
Yeah.
So the last band, and I think this one's going to surprise you, or maybe not, Accept.
Really?
Yeah. I think once Peter left, I was out.
Really?
Yeah, I think with that band, I think Blood of the Nations is brilliant. Stalingrad was really good. Blind Rage is really good.
Yeah.
But then they all started leaving one by one.
Yeah.
And it was, you're left with Wolf and you're left with Mark.
Yeah.
And now they have three guitar players. You know, one of them recently was Joel Hoekstra.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I liked the last record. The Rise of Chaos I really like.
Yeah.
But I don't love them now anywhere near as much as I used to. And I think it was just a case of diminishing returns. This guy left, this guy left. And like,
so
it's Wolf.
Except is interesting because they obviously had a sound for quite a while, right? With things like Fast as a Shark. And everybody kind of knew, well, not everybody, but people who are metal fans knew that, right? You had somewhat of a change with Balls to the Wall, where they kind of stepped it up. I think it was probably a lot too of Michael Wagner kind of working in there and bringing things up. But then you had kind of the lean years of Udo not being there, right? Still had some good stuff, but the sound began to kind of change.
And then really, I think when Mark comes in, it's like except Mach 3 to me, because it's a huge step change in sound. And that was like, holy shit. I was so happy when I heard that, right?
Excellent.
And so I look at it as going, okay, well, obviously Wolf and Mark have formed a good partnership with this, and it's shown through there. And then I wasn't really able to mentally suss out how much Peter Baltus was really still contributing within that, you know, and how much of a difference it would make. And so I think even without him, I'm not happy that he went, but even without him, I'm still like, I'm still into it.
The early albums at Mark, I love. I think Mark suits the band really well.
Yeah.
But I heard the single from the new record.
Yeah.
And I thought it was terrible. I thought the lyrics were awful. I just thought, I've heard this on the last record and the record before and the record before. I already have this album.
Yeah, so I think that maybe they need to, you know, do a reduction maybe in release schedule, maybe spend a little bit more time on stuff, and maybe you'll end up, you know, maybe they just kind of, do they have something contractual? I mean, I don't know.
I'm sure that's
But they are kind of clicking them out, and maybe that is lending to you hearing more of a cookie cutter thing. I still just, in general, I still get excited about Accept albums.
Mm. I liked the last one. I really liked The Rise of Chaos. I thought the last one was, I liked it. But I didn't like it enough to be really excited about this one. And after I heard the first single, I went, actually, I'm not missing anything if I don't buy this.
Right.
So, do you have a band, like, not on my list? Or bands?
I don't know.
Saxon. That's a joke, by the way. Because Saxon are still great.
I still buy everything Saxon puts out. Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there's something over there.
Pearl Jam? That nearly made my list because I haven't bought the last two records.
So I did buy the last one, but I bought it for Nikki. She really is a big Pearl Jam fan. I'm not. I liked Mother Love Bone. They had some good stuff. Temple of the Dog album was awesome. 10 was awesome. I mean, I was listening to 10 before it really hit the radio. And it was, you know, and that's an interesting album because that's basically an album with music done. In comes Eddie and he puts lyrics onto this music, because then the next thing that comes out after that, it sounds markedly different from 10. Now, what I'll say is that, and I've said this to Nikki too, is that a lot of Pearl Jam to me now has turned into this, like, just these long, moaning, dirgy, like a jam band without having any of the pep of a jam band. And I said to her, I'm like, oh my God, they've got, with, you know, like a guitarist like Stone in the band, they've got these incredible guitar players in the band, and they're not even utilizing them.
They're strumming.
Yeah. And you've got like more organ kind of shit going on than you do guitar, and you've got a bass freaking monster with Jeff Amet. So you've got all this stuff that can go on. And it just seems to be like, I just wrote their new song.
With the ukulele in the background.
And I just listen to it and go, what the fuck? And granted, I never got bands like Fish. And I never got into bands like The Grateful Dead. And so, you know, I don't, and they're veering towards that kind of almost jam band aesthetic too. And I just don't get that. But yeah, for them, if that was something that I would say that, yeah, after 10, because then
I think the next one already had started down this path, where it still had a little bit of energy, but it was still like, and then it just got slower and more anemic. And now, like, if she's got it on, because they have a Pearl Jam station on Sirius.
Oh, no.
And after a couple, she'll look over at me and she'll be like, all right, I'll change it. And I just, yeah, I just go, shit, they were really good.
Like, I'll tell you another band that if I had the same discussion 2 or 3 years ago, would have definitely been on it, but I thought their last album was excellent, and the one before that didn't really do anything for me, was Queensryche. I like Condition Human.
Yeah.
The one after that.
Digital Alliance?
No, that's the newer one. The one before that.
Yeah.
I can't think of the name of it. It didn't really do it for me.
Yeah.
Didn't click at all. And then I got Digital Noise Alliance. Is it Digital Noise Alliance? Whatever.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Yeah. And I just thought the band just stepped up, thought it sounded really good. And I was like, this. And I think one of the reasons I really liked that as well was I got on board with the Todd Lattori solo album.
That freaking solo album is awesome.
And
just such a great album.
Just as I was out on him and in Queensryche, the solo album was awesome. And the Queensryche album, I listened to it a fair bit. And I really, really liked it.
Mm.
So they're not on the list, but a couple of years ago, they would have been.
There were definitely some years there. Not recently. I was really happy with kind of Mike in the driver's seat, that it's gone back to we're doing the rock stuff again. You know, we're not doing a lot of the theatric. We're doing the rock stuff again. So it's kind of gone from the, you know, Chris and Jeff, it's kind of shifted back over to the Mike stuff. And I've liked that. I always liked that part of Queensryche. That's what drew me in with the EP. I was like, holy shit, you know? There were some definitely, you know, like when talking to Brian, like American Soldier, I understand the concept. It was a great concept. It was a neat idea. I can appreciate it, but I was like, I can't get into it. You know, even Mind Crime 2 was kind of like, and there was several albums there where there might be a song here or there, but they were not like what you were having on Rage, not like what you were having on Warning. And for a while it was, I might buy it. And it's a couple that I didn't. Now these new ones with Todd back, it's like, this sounds good.
Now the artist that I am not fully out on is Tate, because I really like Kings and Thieves, but he brought out, remember that trilogy?
Yeah.
I didn't buy any of that.
Yeah.
And then he had the Sweet Oblivion records. I like those.
Yeah.
I don't love them. I like them because, you know, it's other guys, it's a Frontiers thing. You guys do the music. We
right.
handed the Tate and he sings on it.
Right.
You know, typical Frontiers. And I think he's doing another one. But with Tate over the years, I haven't bought everything and that he's brought out, and I don't miss not buying some of the stuff, but I'll buy what I want to and really get something out of it. But it never makes me like, oh, I have to get the fucking key.
Right.
You know, the records he did, the trilogy. I've never listened to an album he's brought out more recently and gone, wow, I have to get to those ones.
Yeah.
I've never done that. I don't know about you.
Yeah. For me, that one's kind of like hit and miss. I got a little bit more enthused about him again when we went and saw him. And
oh, he's great life.
And it was like, you know, he was kind of self-deprecating and funny and talkative. And he was really like bringing the performance and stuff. And it was like, oh, all right. And so that kind of got me kind of enthused about him. But I'm not like going out of my way to get any of it. But yeah, Queensryche says they got a new album coming out. I'm like, all right, I'm on board.
Yeah, I'll get the next one.
Yeah.
If I had been a couple of years ago, I would have gone, I don't really want to get it.
Yeah.
That's my list.
It's a short list. You didn't have U2 on there.
There's I love you. I love U2. I'm actually. It's funny, but
well, you're required to by law.
No,
aren't
I'm
you?
Not. Not. No, actually, I'm not. I loved U2 many, many years ago. My wife was a little bit younger than me. She was a bigger fan of U2, and I don't know. Just every so often, you'll just start listening to this band that you haven't listened to in years.
Yeah,
and you just maybe you find some new appreciation for the music, and you go, "Fucking hell, this is actually really good." Like the last couple of U2 records, I think are excellent, and a lot of people went, "Yes, they're not that great," but you know, people listen to music in different ways and get certain different things out of it. But I've grown to appreciate U2 a lot more probably in the last 3 or 4 years after going 10 years without actually putting on one of their albums and just hearing them on the radio if they happen to be on.
Yeah. I was actually one of the first DJs in the US to play them when I had my radio show.
Must have been really early 80s, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, there was me and there was another DJ on the station. I can't remember his last name.
They probably would have played here. They probably would have played here first.
They did.
Yeah. Would have been Boston or New York, I'd say.
At Boston. I want to say they played at the Rat. And yeah, it was the other guy, Sean. Sean had the perfect Bono haircut from the Boy era. Like to a T. It was like unbelievable. Like, how the hell do you do that? But yeah, I was actually one of the first DJs. Me and him used to do that. Was when I was doing Monday Drive Time.
What, I Will Follow? That would have been the first song on the first record.
Yeah, I did that, and there was another one too. It was another early single that I was playing. But yeah, that was Monday Drive Time before I started doing the Saturday All Metal. Yeah. The Invasion.
The band did okay.
Yeah, they did okay for themselves.
Yeah, just 60 shows at the Sphere, made about fucking 10 billion.
Yeah. But, I mean, a lot of the stuff now, yeah, I'm like, yeah. But some of the earlier stuff, it was considering how much music they did, how quickly they did it, how you could see the growth that they had, and how almost completely inexperienced they were when they put Boy out. It's pretty remarkable.
Mm. You have to remember where they came from as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you're talking about late 70s, early 80s Dublin.
Yeah.
Fucking recession. You know, Dublin wasn't anywhere near the city it is now where it comes to culture and, you know, different cultures.
Right. But even having access to, you know, instruments and stuff like that, I mean, you know, the Edge didn't buy that Explorer until they came over to the U.S. and you found it in Manny's music. Which, by the way, Edge, if you're listening to this, I do have a 1976 Explorer just like that. And, you know, so it took a little bit of success before they found the instruments that were like, oh, that's the sound I want. And then they were very good about utilizing those very limited ingredients that they got their hands on to their maximum, you know?
So one of the quirks I have when I'm listening to music, and I don't know whether you're the same as me. Sometimes I will listen to an album more that the majority of people don't like to try and figure out why people don't like it.
No, I don't usually do that.
I can be like that with certain bands.
Yeah,
I'm like, you all hate that. I fucking love this record.
I mean, there's a certain aspect of, you know, something that might be my band, in which I'm more than happy that people don't like it. But I don't really do that. I'll just, if it grabs me, it grabs me. And then sometimes there's ones that don't immediately grab me. So like Death Magnetic, that was one that I was like, and then I listened to it years later, popped it in, and it just was like, I totally get this album now. And it was like, oh, great. Now I love this. But I don't really try to go and say, what if people hate it? Usually, too, if people are complaining about it, I don't tend to even bother to listen. If it's a critique as opposed to a criticism, then I'll listen more because they've looked at aspects that are good and aspects that are bad, as opposed to just a slam on something. And then I usually just like, yeah, I don't even want to know about it.
Mm. It's when people say, oh, it's not like their early stuff. And I'm like, yeah, they're 35 years old.
Correct.
Right. Yeah. That's the one where I won't pay any heed to that. But when I get a review that, or I'll hear something that's a little bit more detailed, that's not just that, then I might say, okay, I think I'm going to listen to this a little bit more now because of that.
Yeah.
Rather than, oh, they're not doing fucking P-Cells or, you know, anything like P-Cells or Master of Puppets.
Right. Which, yeah, they don't. I mean, that was my thing I always say is, yeah, it's hard to write another Kill 'Em All when you're a millionaire driving custom designed hot rods.
Selling art for fucking millions of dollars.
You know, and you grow and you find reasons that you've overcome that angry part of you or a good chunk of it that made you write that. And it's, I don't write the same stuff that I was writing when I was, you know, 18, 19 either.
The one thing I will say about bands, we're fucking talking about you two here, but the one thing I don't like is when you look at the liner notes now and the song is written by 9 people, it's produced by 5 people.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that sort of shit drives me fucking mad. I'm like, what?
Yeah, singular vision.
What are people adding here?
Yeah.
Where is the band and where is everybody else?
Yeah.
It's all blurred.
Yeah.
And you see that a lot more now, you know, all these songs featuring this and produced by this and there's 5 producers on it and it's mixed 3 times. And
well, part of that you got to remember, right? Someone's doing something in like their studio or a different studio.
Yeah.
Right? So they've got a producer at that studio, which is probably more of an engineer, but they get that credit. So then all that goes down to this one guy at the end who's got to kind of wrangle all that together. So yeah, you do end up with all kinds of different producers.
Like, it's like if you and the band write this and it takes you and you to help them co-write it, well, maybe what you and you wrote in the beginning is shit.
Yeah. Yeah, songwriting credits, yeah, that's always like always a kind of a interesting just discussion in general.
Oh, man, I shot Marvin in the face.
Why the fuck did you do that?
Well, I didn't mean to do it. It was an accident.
You know, that whole like, what constitutes having a co-write? Because if you're coming in with, like, lyrics, okay, great. And you got the main guitar riffs and stuff like that, great. And maybe if you've got something like, you know, like Jimmy Bain used to do, all of a sudden he comes out with the keyboard part.
Rainbow in the Dark.
Exactly. And so, okay, it was a simple little part, but that's actually what coalesced that whole song together. Without it, it's like it's not that same song anymore. And it's a simple little thing that he just freaking walked over and went, hey, how about this? And did it. So, like, that deserves a credit. But if you're just like, okay, someone's going to lay a beat behind it, and you're going to just lay down this simple bass line that glues everything together. Do you really get a songwriting credit for that? Like,
what's the thing Mick Wall keeps saying on his podcast? Is that change a word, get a third.
You know, I think if it's a critical thing, or, you know, because sometimes you will have people that will admit that, okay, they were writing a lyric or something and they were stuck, or somebody said, hey, well, what about if you did this instead? And all of a sudden, like, it opened up and it's like, holy shit. And it changed their whole perspective. And they go, you know what? We're going to take a co-write on this. And I think that's great. If you recognize that kind of thing happens, I think that's great. I think I was watching a thing with, oh, fuck me. Guitarist from Thin Lizzy. Scott Gorham.
Which one?
Great interview. Great interview. And he talked a lot about that whole dynamic of things where, like, it got to the point where Phil would allow him to actually take a peek at a lyric. Hey, what do you think of this? Which took a long time. And then Phil would show appreciation for, oh, wow, Scott, that was, I never would have thought of that. Like, boom. Or, you know, you get that Robbo comes up with this line that changes the whole thing. And so it may be that it was that Phil and Scott came in with the song, but now Robbo did this other little line that made everybody change their perspective. And they go, hey, you know what? Robbo gets a co-write on this.
But the other thing you have to remember back then is how short a span of time they had to write.
Oh, hell yeah.
Whereas now,
yeah,
they can take months.
Sure.
And maybe that's where all these other people get involved in it.
There's definitely the you know, bands we grew up with where you know, it, you know, the album credit says it was recorded, you know, Star Theater in New Jersey. This is the guy producing it. This, you know, it's very compact. Where now, yeah, today you could have drums in one studio, guitar and bass in everybody's home studio with their laptop, vocals in a studio somewhere else, and then everything, all those stems come together and it gets all mixed down. And there's a lot of that now.
You know how I feel about that.
Yeah, I know.
But that's all I got.
All right. That was a very good, thought-provoking question. And I'll be thinking about it. I'll be driving to work tomorrow going, fuck, that band.
I know there's people out there, and the names they'd be rattling off will be Iron Maiden might be one, Megadeth might be one.
Yeah.
Def Leppard will be another one, maybe.
Yeah, Def Leppard. I was thinking of
Def
that.
Def Leppard were shit after fucking First Tree Records.
The thing is, like with Leppard, so I could see where some people would say that. And there's definitely albums that came out by them that it's like, but if you know where they came from and you know what their influences are, you look at those and go, those are totally honest albums. And for me, that counts for a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So to know that is like, okay, I can see this and I can see where they started, what they were into, and they've now been able to be able to afford to go back and revisit a lot of that stuff. And they've always said things like, we fucking love Sweet.
Here's your
they've
Slade.
They've never said they've
Here's
denied
Sweet.
Here's
a Slade sounding song. Here's your T-Rex
exactly.
sounding song.
Exactly.
Queen.
Yeah.
There's always been a massive Queen influence
exactly.
in that band.
So they've never denied any of that.
Tin Lizzy. Another band.
Yeah. So I'm okay with that. And I think they make the stuff honestly. And yeah, that would, but I can definitely see there were people that would be like, probably after like Adrenalize, they were all done.
Aerosmith would be another one.
Aerosmith,
I know they haven't brought out an album in a long time.
They
but
haven't.
And with a lot of people that just pushed play, they were done. Or they're even done before that. They were done with Permanent Vacation and Pump, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, that last one, what is it, Music from Another Dimension?
Yeah.
It wasn't that great.
There's three or four decent songs on it, and then ballads.
And granted, I'm classic Aerosmith guy, but you do start to find appreciation in things like Permanent Vacation, where there's like, there's still this blues hard rock thing is still happening in there. And even some of the other ones with Nine Lives and stuff, where okay, the big songs don't have that in it, but then you listen to some of the other tracks and go, okay, it's there. Now what I will say is I get a little disappointed with Joe, because the first couple of Joe Perry Project albums, I fucking love.
Yeah, they're very good.
But when you look at some of the stuff that he's put out since then, the last couple of years, it's like, okay, you know, you got 10 songs, maybe three of them really grab me. And the others, yeah, you're just kind of having fun on it. So that one there, I think, has drifted a bit for me. But for Aerosmith, I can usually find something. I don't think they should ever put out, like, another new album. I just think it's like, no, that last one you did.
Do you know what the underrated album is out of all the guys in Aerosmith? Whitford St. Holmes. It's fucking great.
Oh, I have
record.
That vinyl.
It's a fucking fantastic record.
It is. And yeah, they were just a really good team. Between Derek and Brad, really, really good.
But you listen to that and you're like, why the fuck didn't he write more in Aerosmith? If he can fucking write that stuff.
Yeah, and there is, I mean, there's good stuff that Brad wrote in there.
Yeah, but not a lot.
No, and it's hard to try to push through the songwriting team
when you have Marty Fredericks and fucking Desmond Child.
But even then, now, I mean, it's you got to realize that that was stuff that he wrote with Derek.
Yeah,
when he left, which had been like I think right after Night in the Ruts. So that goes back a long time, and I don't think now he's got really that interest in
writing
and doing that. Yeah,
didn't he bring out another album with Derrickson Holmes a couple of years ago?
And they did
it made up here, I think.
I think so.
They did Hampton Beach.
Yeah, but
I didn't go to that.
And again, you know, in this case, the latter day, right? You do have all the songwriters, and then you're trying to get through Brand Tyler. And then kind of the Tyler Perry writing team and stuff. And it's hard to, same thing with you know, there were some good chestnuts that Tom Hamilton took part in too. And yeah, it's just kind of same deal. It's tough.
Mm. But yeah, we better stop talking. It's getting bright.
I know, it was weird to actually start a discussion today and it was light out, not dark. But yeah. All right, well. Then I think with that, that's it. There ain't no more stick a fork in it. This puppy is done. So for myself,
Richie,
have yourselves a great middle week. And until we talk to you again next time, as always, remember,
focus on metal.
Everything else is insignificant.
Still here? It's over. Go home.